Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Everyone, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Alan Simmons. Alan is a Marine Corps veteran who deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan, and he wrestled with PTSD from a traumatic brain injury that he sustained while serving in Afghanistan. In his healing journey, he battled depression and suicidal thoughts as he set on a new path of purpose. He's also the host of the Purpose Pod podcast and author of the book, Can I Speak? And he's here today to talk about his experiences and how he overcame the obstacles that stood in his way. So welcome to the show, Alan. I'm glad to have you on, and I'm looking forward to getting to talk with you.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it. Thank you for introducing me to your audience.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to do it. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself, your background, how you got into the Marines and things like that.
Okay, great. So this is my intro. What's up? What's up, everybody? This is your boy, Mr. Never Stop, Never Quit, Repeat himself, Alan Levi Simmons, and I'm on the Drive On podcast. So thank you, Scott, for having me. So I just want to do that. And I'm from Somerville, South Carolina, a town near Charleston. I went into the Marine Corps in 2007. I played football, wrestling, ran track hurdles in high school. Funny story about joining the Marine Corps that I'll share during this interview when you asked me, why did you join the Marine Corps? but it's a very odd, funny story. But I joined the Marine Corps in 2007, deployed twice, Iraq, Afghanistan. And from there, wrestled with PTSD, suicide, alcohol addiction, marijuana addiction, just a loss of identity and, you know, finding purpose after trauma. Was my story, for the most part, which led me to writing poetry, writing my book, which we'll dive into some more, but that's just the overall thing. And then I went to UNC Charlotte, graduated with electrical engineering technology degree, which was a struggle. I'm married to my beautiful wife, and I have a lovely newborn daughter. She's Lola Rose Simmons. She was born in November. So I'm taking on this journey as a father now, which is the biggest war on earth. So that's where I'm at right now.
You got that right. It definitely is. It's but you know what? It's one that's worth fighting, and it pays off so much down the road as you see them grow into with their own personalities and their own interest and everything like that. Just it really does pay off down the line. So all those sleepless nights you look back on and you're like, you know what, okay, it wasn't all that bad.
Yeah, it was worth it.
Yeah, it definitely was worth it. But I love the energy to starting off with this. So it's I really do appreciate that. So you said you had a kind of funny story about getting into the Marine Corps. Yes. Why don't you go ahead and talk about that a little bit?
Okay, so it's odd funny. So if you don't think it's funny, then it might not be funny, but it is really funny. When I was in high school, I never wanted to be in the military. my dad was in the Army, grandfather was in the Army, World War II veteran. And, I just didn't even know who I wanted to be in high school. But, as a young guy, in high school, you're in a dating scene and, you're having sex pretty much. We're doing stuff. I was doing stuff like that. I ended up in a situation where this young lady I was off and on with was pregnant. She comes to me, she says, Alan, I'm pregnant. That was like the end of the world for me because I'm young, don't know where I'm going in life, and my dad's going to put his fist through my chest. Right. So, right. I did not know what I was going to do at that point in time. And lo and behold, a couple of buddies of mine from like track and wrestling came up to me. It was like, Simmons, we're joining the Marine Corps. You should come in with us. And I'm like, what? Forget that. The Marine Corps, they're going to send me to war. I'm not trying to go to no war, Right. And that's where I was at that time. And next thing you know, I'm in boot camp, and I'm in boot camp. Right. And like I said, I'm a newly father. First time father. So in boot camp, I get a letter in the mail, and it's from somebody I went to high school with, and he's just tormented with this information that the baby wasn't mine, and that it was a plan the whole time to pretty much take the heat off of one guy and put it on me because I'm a good guy. I'm a good uncle. So yeah, I'm in boot camp and I read this letter and I'm flipping out because I'm in hell in boot camp. I'm like going through hell in boot camp. And, you know, I call my dad. I'm like, Dad, I'm ready to get out of here. I don't want to be here anymore. He's like, son, you got to stay. And I was like, but little did I know it was, you know, the best decision for me at that time. And so, yeah, that's how I joined.
You know what? Everyone has a slightly different story in terms of how they got into the military. And, you know, some people, like you said, you had, you know, military in your family, your father, your grandfather and everything. And, you know, other people, they never had anyone in their family serve in the military. And then all of a sudden, that just seems like the best option for them. You know, they're on a dead end path. They don't have any, you know, they're not great in school. They don't have any career prospects or anything like that. And like, you know what the hell? I'll just join the military. And, you know, everyone's path is a little bit different, but it always, you know, a lot of times people come out of it saying, you know, it was the greatest decision I've ever made. And, you know, it sucks while you're going through it. Like we all get that, right? It's like, why am I doing this? You know, you're out in the cold or the rain or the, you know, you're carrying all this heavy weight and all this other stuff. And you're like, why am I doing this? This is so dumb. And why I wish I didn't do this. But then looking back on it, it's just like being a father. You're looking back on it all these years later. It's like, you know what? I'm glad I did that. It might have sucked at the time, but it's definitely worthwhile. And it changed who I am, but for the better. So yeah, I totally get that. I'm glad that you shared that story with us. So you ended up, you're in Iraq, and Afghanistan as well. And you wound up with a TBI during your deployment. Obviously, medical conditions and their symptoms can vary from one person to the next, right? But for those who aren't familiar with traumatic brain injuries or TBIs, could you explain what caused it in your case? Like what the circumstances were around that, and what symptoms you were experiencing, you know, in the aftermath of that?
Okay. Yeah, so that's a good question because people don't usually ask about the symptoms that you use. They're like, oh, you went to war. Oh, that happened. And that's cool. You know, but they don't think about what everybody wrestles with afterwards. So, so when I went to Afghanistan, so Iraq was Baghdad was in like 2008. I left from Okinawa, Japan, my first duty station to Iraq to support the multinational unit out there. I was in the Joint Operations Center. It was pretty cool because, you know, I was an electrician in the Marine Corps. Here I am as intelligence and I'm going and filling radios, encrypting them and doing different missions and different things. That was pretty cool. You know, in Iraq, I'm backtracking and I'll get to Afghanistan. But Iraq was a totally different war because, you know, you had these people blowing themselves up, you know, like they're putting bombs on their bodies, bombs in the vehicle. And they're driving into a loaded area, packed area. They're driving into the security state, you know, the security guards and just different things. The Ministry of Interior, they're driving truckloads of bombs and explosives into buildings. And it's just crazy. You know, we would get IDF, indirect fire attacks, you know, while in Baghdad. And, you know, I didn't, you know, it was crazy being there because I was so young and, you know, you heard the gunfire, you heard the mortars landing, you heard all of that. You felt the building shake from the explosions. You see the dust and the breeze fall from the building, right? And it's like, it still didn't really hit me yet. And it's so crazy when I stand here now thinking about being in war, like, you know, it's just like the fact that I was there, it's just crazy. So, you know, I make it through Iraq. I actually had a pretty decent time in Iraq, even though like there was the traumatic experiences of like, you know, and IDF attacks and stuff. Just the culture of being there with the Air Force, Army, the Navy was just amazing as a Marine. So I leave from Iraq, go to back to Japan, PCS over to California. And I knew, like, I have this bad luck thing, Scott, right? So, you know, the bad luck is like, you know, oh, you got a baby, join the Marine Corps, you know, do something drastic. I couldn't have got a job or something, right? I could have joined the Marine Corps, right? And then, bam, you join the Marine Corps, and then, bam, you're in Iraq, right? And then, so I go to California. I'm having the time of my life, going to LA, living it up, right? And it's just like the bad luck thing happens again, where it was like, Simmons, you're going to be support for first EOD. I was like, what? You know, EOD is explosive ordnance disposal. You know, so I'm like, electrician supporting EOD. Here I go again on another mission. You know, and that was an experience. I have all the respect in the world for EOD, you know, because of the hazardous job that they have and the lives that were lost, you know, even just throughout all deployments, you know, when you find bombs, you call EOD, you know, so when I was attached to EOD, it wasn't fun because I was like paperwork pushing. Nobody respects the paperwork pusher. The guy that's answering the front desk, right? I'm answering the call for the front desk for everybody. So, you know, I'm a Marine and I'm an electrician, but now I'm just somebody in a support role and they treat you a little different in support roles. But it was cool. I built a bond with a couple of guys and the other support personnel. So we're getting ready for Afghanistan and there's funerals happening. There's bodies being sent back. There's guys coming back with no legs. There's that feeling of, man, this might be it. You know, like that was the feeling I felt. I was like, man, this might be it. So we're deploying in October and my birthday is October 15th. We're leaving October 16th. And I'm just like, okay, I'm in California. I'm about to party my life. You know how it is when you're in the military.
So for sure.
I went out there and I lived it up, bro. I'm got so wasted. I'm talking about I've never had beer goggles before until that moment. And I realized that I was seeing through some liquor beer goggles. Like I was like walking in the bar, just stumbling, right? And I really was just trying to suppress my emotions and just go through the motions, right? So lo and behold, crazy other story is that I almost missed the move. I almost missed my deployment to Afghanistan because I was 45 minutes away from base, woke up in some lady's house, and I'm just fine. Now, this girl I was talking to, she picked me up and got me some McDonald's, and I fell asleep when she got me the McDonald's. And I woke up the next morning, and it was the birds were chirping. The sun was out. And when we were making that move to Afghanistan, we were supposed to be at the armory at 0:30. It's supposed to be dark outside, 4 o'clock in the morning, right? And so here I am waking up and the sun's out. And I'm like, oh, snap. Oh, I'm yelling at the girl. Why did you wake me up? Why didn't you wake me up? And she's like, I tried. You were knocked out. And I look at my phone, Scott, and there's like, Simmons, you're screwed. You're air. Beep, beep, beep. All the curse words in the world. You're done. Page 11, NJP's coming up. Like, I'm like, I'm afraid for my life. I was not about to return. So right. I get the base. I still have to pack up my barrack room and I got to go to the armory and I'm not supposed to carry my weapon in my vehicle, but I'm doing it anyways. And, you know, so I get there to first EOD and, you know, pretty much everybody's looking at me like dirtbag, dirtbag, dirtbag. I got the dirtbag look. So everybody's looking at me dirtbag. And this just goes out to the people who were dirtbags in their military career. So, you know, you're not alone. So I get there and they slap me with page 11, right? And I get a page 11 and they're like, Simmons, we could NJP you, you know, and like pretty much court-martial you, but you know, this is just a shock to us, you know, like, it's like, what the F? Another gunny gave me hell. I gave him hell back. They didn't like it, right? I don't like people talking down on me. So I'm like, F you, gunny, right? So, all right, so we get to Afghanistan and, you know, you get the leatherneck first. And I'm thinking that I was going to be in the green zone, the safe space, right? And they're telling all the support personnel, you're there, Simmons, you're in Marja. And I was like, Marja, where's Marja? I never even Googled that before. Where's Marja? So they're sending me to Marja, Taliban Central, pretty much. And, you know, I go there and I'm a support personnel. So fast forward, you know, a couple of months in December, and I was asked if I wanted to be on a patrol. So, you know, Simmons, the electrician, support personnel guy. Yeah, I want to go on a patrol. At that time, Scott, I had already been in charge of the IED lane. Whenever people came in country, I would actually be the guy in the tower, helping set up the IED core, setting deck, you know, deck cords and stuff like that, and making them go boom, boom, right? Whenever people was by IEDs in assimilation trail. So I had some knowledge about how the Taliban, you know, would put pressure cookers or some plates on the in the ground. And so I was okay with that. I was well versed. I was like, yeah, I'll go on a patrol. And, you know, next morning I wake up, you know, ready to go. And we're doing a presence patrol. So we're letting them know, like, hey, we're just here for your safety. You know, captain's going over the formation and stuff. And he's like, yeah, Simmons, you're going to be up front in the V formation. Right? Like, here goes the bad luck thing again. Right? So here's the bad luck thing. I'm like, you guys want me as point in this formation? All these infantry guys. I'm the black guy. I will die first. I said that, literally. I said, I will die first. Everybody knows that. Like, why would you do that? So everybody laughed. All right, so just get up front. So I went up front anyway, right? And so we're walking, you know, and we get to this house and this guy is in the back and I'm like watching him. And he's like on his phone doing some weird stuff. And I'm like, hey, man, I see a guy back there. It was like, Simmons, this is your first patrol out here. Just chill, calm down. Everything's okay. Everybody's not a Taliban. I was like, whatever. I think he's sketchy. Next thing you know, some guys come by on a moped. They wave, inshallah, inshallah. We're like, oh, inshallah, hello, right? And they drive by. So we leave this house, and I'm point in the V formation, which is like a V, right? And I'm the point guy over here on the right side, and you got an infantry guy over here on the other side. And my sergeant was in the middle of the V formation with a metal detector. He's EOD, right? So we had a metal detector, and we had a radio jammer, the Thor pack, right? So I'm up front and I'm just walking, walking, walking. Next thing you know, this kid comes out and he's like, ah, blah, blah, blah. He was speaking his language. And the interpreter was like, he says the Taliban just placed the IED in the road and told everybody to go in the house. I said, this is just my bad luck. Here we go again, Scott. Bad luck, Alan. So I'm like, okay. You know, like I'm walking, I'm taking like little baby steps and I'm looking at the earth. And we're walking, I'm walking through this like garden. So there's like little mounds of like dirt, you know, and everything's disturbed already. So I get to this intersection and I'm looking through my rifle scope, you know, seeing if I see anything. Everybody's in the house. Nobody's outside, right? And I hear something say like, look by your foot. And this is where I get my little spiritual side, right? Because I feel like God spoke to me that day and said, look by your foot, right? Nobody else was there to say that. So I look by my foot, Scott, and there's a haystack. It's about knee high, right? And the voice said, look under the haystack. Could have been my voice. I don't know. I don't know what it was. But I look under the haystack, and there was this propane tank with 12 9-volt batteries, a cell phone strapped on top of it, wires coming out of the batteries to the cell phone. Like, it was all like, oh, my God, IED. I'm like, IED, IED. And I'm there in a headlight, stuck, standing next to this IED. And, you know, like, I don't know what I was thinking. My whole life flashed before my eyes, pretty much. I'm just like, I'm dead. I'm gone. You know, that's it. And so my sergeant, he had the Thor pack, right? The radio jammer. So it was actually jamming radio signals, right? So I was thankfully within the bandwidth or within the air, the radius of that Thor jammer. Our radio jammer. So he puts the pack down. He's like, Simmons, get over there. I go over there. I go in the ditch and I'm like shaking. I'm in the ditch, like, you know, curled up like this. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Right. And this infantry guy, he's like, hey, Simmons, we got to go clear this house. Like, bro, I just found an IED. Right. So he's like, yeah, we got to go clear this house. So he pops some smoke in the road and we just go through the smoke, go over to this field. And we get to this house, just get in the house, and there's a man and his kids playing in some clay, and they're looking up at us. We're like, stay here, stay here, stay here, stay here. Of course, they knew that because they were inside. They already knew what was happening out there. So we're like, stay here, stay here. Get outside, looking around. There's kids running from house to house, like people are running over here. And I see this guy taking off, Scott. He's running, right, in the opposite direction towards some tree lines, right, a whole line of trees. And I have him in my scope. I'm just in training mode, right? I'm just like, I put him in my scope. I'm tracking this guy, I don't want to say the guy's name, but another Marine was with me, and he calls in, command, possible Taliban, can we engage? And they're like, does he have a weapon? This is my first time being in a place where there's rules of engagement are taking place right before my eyes. And he's like, does he have a weapon? We're like, don't know. He has a blue vest on. He has a device in his hand. Can we engage? And it's like, if we can't confirm that it's a weapon, don't engage. Right. So we don't engage. This guy disappears into the tree line. Next thing you know, like just AK-47, like just being shot at. You can see the muzzle flash from the tree line. I'm like, I hit the deck. I'm over here. I put my rifle on burst, right? You know, I was just straight up just like, oh, commando, burst. You know, and I'm shooting in the tree line, and like, the guy was like, he was like, Simmons, get your effing rifle off of burst and put it on single shot. And, you know, like, because I'm about to run my rifle hot and probably jam up my rifle and just pretty much wasting bullets and stuff. So I do that, and we're just returning fire back in the tree line. And here I am, another funny moment in the midst of all of this stuff is like, I'm next to another haystack. And I was like, all right, dang, I said the guy. Anyway, I was like, nobody know who he is. But so I was like, hey, switch with me. And I was like, I'm next to a haystack. He's like, are you serious? Switch with him. And then he's like, we got to bound back. And the moment we started going back to the rest of the platoon, you know, we're dodging bullets. And there's this RPG blast, just poof, about like 7-8 feet in front of me. And I just remember the poof, and I'm getting flown back, land on the ground. My ears are ringing like a smoke detector. My heartbeat singing loudly, slowly fading into a whisper. Like, it was just like my life just flashed before my eyes again. And I could hear the loud ringing in my ears, and I could hear my heartbeat, you know, and it starts to like slow down. And then the noise just like fades away. And I'm like, out, right? And like, while I'm out, I'm like in this other place. I don't know where I was, but I remember sitting Indian style. Like, I'm dead. I was Indian style in a dark room, like while I'm laying on the ground in Afghanistan. I'm sitting Indian style in some dark room, like I am dead. Like, I thought that was it. And, you know, I just come to, people are on top of me, shaking me, saying, get the F up. I wake up, grabbing my legs, grabbing my arms, trying to make sure I got all my limbs. And, you know, we get into a firefight for a little while and get air support and make our way back. I know that was a long story. I just had to share how it was.
Yeah, sure. So no, I'm glad you did.
People could get it. Yeah.
Yeah, but, for sure. So the explosion goes off, right? And you're basically knocked out for a period of time, right?
Yeah.
And you have the ears ringing, the your heart's pumping, all these things are happening, right? Mm-hmm. Now, fast forward a little bit. Mm-hmm. Were you sent home because of this injury, or was this something that you were able to continue on in your deployment while you're over there?
Yeah, I wish they would have sent me home. Then I would have took it more seriously, right?
Right.
I just kind of, you know, when we got back, I stayed, you know, for the whole deployment. And, you know, I didn't see a doc after that. You know, you're supposed to see doc. They said, don't go to sleep. I didn't go to sleep for a little while. And the next day, you talked about symptoms, right? The next day, you know, I was narcoleptic. I was falling asleep while I was talking to my chief warrant officer. I was talking to him and I fell asleep. And they took a picture of me sleeping and they showed it to me when I came back and started talking again. They're like, Simmons, what the F? Like, I was like, what? They're like, this is you. I was like, when was this? They was like, just now. And I was like, no way. Like, I'm sitting here talking to Chiwo, right? And then, you know, there was like going to the chow hall, I would forget my cover, you know, I forget my rifle. And like, I'm just like, you know, in the middle of the night, people are trying to get off of their racks to go, you know, we're sleeping on these cottages, right? So they're trying to get off their racks to go make a head call. And I'm like, I think my chivo, his rack was not right next to me. My chief warrant officer, he had a rack right next to me. And like, I remember one night he was moving and I just like hop up, like still dead sleep, but I'm like, I'm aware of what I'm doing, but I'm not controlling myself. And I was like, what are you doing? And he looked up at me and then he gets right back in his rack and he just like goes right back to sleep. He was like, the next day there was like, Simmons, we got to put a radio by your head because it's just like, you know, you're like, you're scared us, like, you know. So fast forward, you know, it didn't really hit me because now I'm like, I'm processing out the military, I'm EASing, and I'm like trying to prepare for my next, and I'm not able to actually like address what I had just went through, you know. So, you know, after that, it was anxiety. It was feeling like somebody was trying to kill me. Like I'm in Virginia, searching my apartment with my pistol. I'm searching behind my shower curtains. I'm putting chairs in the middle of my hallway so that if when I leave, if somebody comes in, I'll know somebody moves something. I'm like very paranoid. You know, I'm drinking a lot. I'm taking these medications from the VA. I'm feeling suicidal. I'm feeling crazy. I'm feeling out of myself. But then the whole time, as us military people can do, we could put on a smile. We could put on that, I'm okay, you know, but then we're struggling on the inside. So that's what I was facing right there.
Yeah. And again, I think I was saying earlier that, you know, a lot of these symptoms could be things that affect people differently. Not everyone's going to experience the same exact thing that you experienced. Right. But I think it's great that you mentioned what you were experiencing, because anyone who may have experienced some sort of traumatic brain injury through you know, deployment or some other part of their service, you know, they may not realize that the way they're behaving, the paranoia, the, you know, all this other stuff that they may be experiencing, mm-hmm. could be a result of that. And mm-hmm. you know, by sharing that information, that that, you know, hopefully we'll open up some people's eyes to that possibility. Yeah. So that way they can get the help that they need. And speaking of, you know, getting the help that people might need, how are you doing now, or how are you coping with this TBI? Is it something that, you know, gets better over time, or is this something that's like a lifelong thing that you're going to just have to live with?
Yeah, that's a good question, Scott. So I don't think it gets better over time. I think you as a veteran get better over time. But it still lingers, you know, like I fought like hell to get through college, you know, after dropping out and going back after like 8 years of dropping out. You know, I couldn't retain information. I couldn't, you know, sit down and read in a classroom, bro. Like you take us from, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq, and you put us in a classroom, or even just anybody who, even if they never served or never went overseas, but they served, you're on this fast pace, intensity, speed, and then you go get put in, you get put in a classroom, and it's like, well, I can't even focus, right?
Yeah.
So I think the PTSD and the TBI just increased that even more, to where, you know, I try sitting in front of the class, I'm like taking notes and I'm doing everything I need to do, and like it's like I'm going crazy because I felt like I just sat in a classroom for no reason. You know, I didn't retain anything, so it was really hard for me to finish college. And then as we speak right now, you know, I'm an engineer now, right? And I work at a IBM, and I do software support. And it's crazy that I'm saying these things because I'm still in shock every day that I go to work. I'm like, they must be going crazy because they picked me, right? But so I say that because it's still a struggle for me. Like people see me, they see me being motivated, they see me inspiring people, they see me telling people don't commit suicide. But my wife sees me, oh man, I don't know what I need to do. I'm trying to focus. I can't focus. I'm trying to retain stuff. I can't retain stuff. Like it's a struggle still. So. You know, I'm at the VA. I'm going to the VA now. I'm getting therapy and memory therapy, all that stuff. And, you know, trying to work on it. I'm very transparent with my boss. I let them know what I'm going through. And, you know, so I think it's that side versus the suicide side. So there's there's that side that I overcame, the suicide side. And then there's the side of dealing with the repercussions of traumatic brain injury and war.
Right. And well, I'm glad that there are services available that are going to help you with your memory, you know, hopefully and get you to a point where it's, you know, hopefully you don't need that type of service anymore, but there is stuff available there. And that's something that, you know, it, just for me personally, it's not something that I've experienced. I didn't have any TBIs or anything like that. So it's just not something I'm aware of, but I can imagine other people who might have gone through something similar to you. If they don't reach out and ask what's available, they may not know that that's something that's even available. So that's another great thing that you mentioned there, because you know, it's just another tool for people to use to hopefully you know, get themselves better if they're struggling with that on their own.
So I
did the math earlier, and mm-hmm. I interviewed over somewhere around 140 people, different people on this podcast. And one of the common themes that I found in the people who overcome adversity of one sort or another, whether it's a TBI, whether it's PTSD, whether it's, you know, anything that they're overcoming, is that they made a choice to not let those circumstances that they find themselves in to define them. They find the good in life and live a life of purpose. They find something to serve that's bigger than themselves. They devote themselves to their family or to, something that they're passionate about. And I have to imagine that you probably had a similar moment where you decided to make the choice to find your purpose. I'm thinking that's probably something similar that you have with all these other people. What was that like for you? Did you come to that conclusion that you needed to step out of your own way and find that purpose, or what was that like?
Yeah. So another good question, Scott. You're doing a great job. You superstar. You. So when I was in Virginia, this is probably like 2012, 2013. So I got back from my deployment 2011, got out 2011. And I think around 2012, things were catching up with me. You know, I could no longer avoid them anymore. And there was one night, I'm in my apartment and I'm just kind of done. I just got finished staring at myself in the mirror, like literally, you know, in my poetry, I talk about it a lot, but like the mirror, facing the person in the mirror. I used to go to the mirror in my bathroom and put my nose against the mirror like this. And I'm like eye to eye with the mirror and I'm looking at myself. And I would ask myself, I said, who are you? Who are you? Who are you? And I kept saying it over and over and over. And I'm just like, if somebody was looking at me right now, they'd be like, this dude's losing it. But like for me, I felt like a part of me died. I felt like this person that was being mobile was this artificial Alan. And I was stuck inside of me. And I'm asking this person that's right in the front of the mirror, who are you? Because you're fooling everybody. You're fooling yourself. And I couldn't find the answer, you know, Scott. So you talk about finding the purpose, right? So I couldn't find the answer. And so I'm on my bed, pills on my bed, my Bible on my nightstand, paranoia tiptoeing through the hallway of my home. I had my gun in my hand, had my finger on the trigger, you know, and I put the gun in my mouth and I'm just like, okay, like I don't want to take the pills. I'll just kill myself with a gun, you know? And here I am having this out of body experience. Like, who am I? Like, I've never wanted to be in this position. I never thought that I would be in this place, right? And I'm all the way at the bottom. And I said, there's no one to stop me. Like literally, Scott, I'm in my house by myself. There's nobody to stop me. And so I'm like, I'm crying now. I'm crying. The inner Alan did not want to do it, but this person, the shell, is done with it. He's done with it. So I'm crying. I'm just like weeping, man. And this another, like I said, when I said, like, I heard somebody, something speak to me, I heard God speak to me in Afghanistan. There's this, like, I had my little nightstand by my bed, and there was this little street light shining through my window that night. And there's this Bible that my grandmother gave me a long time ago. I just kept it with me because it reminded me of her, and didn't really open it a lot. But that, when the light hit the Bible, I felt this like breaking happen inside of me. Like I can't even explain. It's like something broke inside of me. And it wasn't like a hard break. It was like a love break. Like when you love somebody and it just, your heart just changes, right? When I felt that break, I heard this voice again. Call me crazy, I don't know. But I heard the voice again. And the voice says, in my spirit, in my mind, I hear this voice like I hear my own self thinking. It was another voice that said, who are you to take your own life when I brought you from the land of your enemy? Like literally that voice said that, and I can hear it to this day. Who are you to take your own life when I brought you from the land of your enemy? I broke down crying. I'm in a fetal position. My gun's beside me. I wake up the next morning, Scott, and I felt light as a feather. I felt like that was a dream. I felt like I felt like Alan. And I walked to the pawn shop that was down the street from me. I just gave them my gun, bro. I was like, take it. I don't want it. You know, and I went on and I struggled here and there. I drank, I smoked weed, and I was out there having sex, just throwing myself out there in the world. But I was still at this point, like asking God, like, God, what do you want me to do? Like, help me, like whatever you need. And that's where my life started making changes right there. So.
Wow. That is, there's a lot going on there, right?
Yeah.
and it's, well, first off, you know, I'm glad that, you know, whatever it was, whatever that voice was inside of you, that breaking, I'm glad that you went the route that you did go, as opposed to going the other direction. You know, because I think that this story is powerful, and it shows just how quick someone's life can go from, you know, one direction to, you know, complete 180, going in a totally different direction. Like you said, you know, like you never thought you'd be in this situation. You never thought you'd be here, but then here you are, right? My gosh, I can't imagine, you know, being at that point and, you know, just through circumstances that, you know, you really didn't have much control over, you know, it was just things that happened to you. And then here you are, you know, now you do have control over things, and you're debating about, you know, how you're going to get through this. Right. But you didn't quit on yourself, right? You didn't stop living. You did the opposite. You kept going, and you know, you found this sense of purpose, and you're out there motivating people. You know, I can see on your shirt this quote that you have is "never stop, never quit, repeat."
That's right.
And and that When I read that quote on your website, when I was doing a little doing a little stalking like I do for all these episodes and trying to figure out, you know, all right, who are these people I'm talking to, right? But I saw that quote, and at first when I read it, I stopped. I had to read it again, and I was like, you know what, that's a great mindset to have. You don't stop. Just and I'm paraphrasing, you know, this may not be exactly what you're doing here, but don't stop what you're doing just because it gets hard. Don't quit on yourself or whatever it is, because it's a struggle. Keep going. Right. You know, like the title of this podcast, Drive On, just keep going. Right.
Drive on. Right.
And then repeat it. Do it again. You know,
yep.
Just because it's hard doesn't mean that it's not worth doing. You know, I was talking to somebody else the other day, and they're saying that, you know, just because you face some struggle, some adversity, some trial in your life, something that is hard, like good. You're supposed to. That's part of life.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that it's good that, you know, what happened to you happened, but right. You know, that if you're not struggling at some point in life, you're not really living. You're not, mm-hmm. you're not growing as a person. And
yeah,
sometimes you're going to be dealt a bad hand. You're going to get these, you know, this bad situation thrown at you. And you have to learn how to adapt to it and overcome. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, that's, we talk about that in the military all the time, adapt and overcome, right?
Adapt and overcome.
And if you can do that, you're going to come out stronger on the other side of it. And you'll be able to not only face that thing, whatever that thing is for you, mm-hmm. but you'll be able to face the next thing, you know, head on and be able to just push your way right through it. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Man, you preach it right now, brother. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, man, you know, it's so powerful and so real. I call it the valley experience because, you know, so like I'm a spiritual guy, I'm a Christian, but I'm not like the everyday Christian that you see on TV or something. I'm like the Christian who I love people, you know, because God made them. I love people, all people, because God made them. I love people who are in the pit, in the bottom of hell, right? And I love them because that's where I was. And I love them because they don't think that other people love them that much. And, you know, so God has given me a mission. I say it so, and then like, I say it not to, for people who are out there and they don't have the same views as me. I say it with all respect, like not trying to convince anybody to believe what I believe. So, you know, but I feel like God has purposed me to go into the world and to find people who are lost. And when I say lost, they could be fathers, mothers, sisters, brothers. They could be engineers, doctors, veterans, whatever. And there's people out there who are lost because their inner self is trying to connect with their outer self, right? They're like I was, looking for the reflection. Who are you? And when they're in the valley, it's so hard to see over the mountain. It's so hard to see the bright side of life. It's so hard to see, oh, one day you'll have children. One day you'll get married. One day you'll write a book. One day you'll start a podcast. One day, one day, one day. And it's so hard to think about one day when you're trying to live for today. So, you know, I go out there being this motivational guy because it's a life or death matter. It's a life or death matter. When somebody walks past me, this guy, I was coming out the gym. He was like, he walked past me and he turns around. He's like, I like that shirt. You know, because you never know what people are going through, especially now. But people could be stopping what they believe, you know, themselves to do. They could be quitting on their family, quitting on their job. Most importantly, quitting on themselves. And they see never stop, never quit, repeat. And it's a formula that is so simple that it just talks about a daily life of persistence, you know, day by day.
Yeah, and persistence is the key, I think, to all of this, right? You can't put in, you know, one day of hard work trying to overcome some of these things, and then mm-hmm. you know, just expect the next morning you magically wake up and everything's, you know, rainbows and unicorns, right?
Everything's,
you know, it's not going to be that way necessarily.
Yeah.
But if you're persistent with it and you put in the work and the effort to move yourself in the right direction, move your family in the right direction, move your career, whatever it is, move mm-hmm. that thing in the right direction, then you're going to see the benefits for it from it. Mm-hmm. You know, look at anybody who's ever been successful in anything, and you know, athletes or businessmen or, you know, people like that. Look at any of them, and none of them are successful because they quit after the first hard day that they had, right?
Yeah.
They exactly. all have had hard days. Mm-hmm. You may not see those hard days sitting on the sidelines, not knowing what their day to day is like, right? But mm-hmm. but they all had hard days at one point or another, and they persevered. They kept going. They showed up and they did the work. They put in the effort, and here they are. And you know, they're successful because of those things. So, mm-hmm. so I think that's kind of the key there. Right.
Yeah.
I also want to, I wanted to get a chance to, I mentioned your poetry at the beginning of this episode, but mm-hmm. I want to give you a chance to talk about your poetry, how you got into poetry. And is that part of your healing process, or is this something that you've always done? You've always kind of written poetry. And then tell us what the book is all about, and what prompted you to not only write it, but to publish it out there for the world to read, right?
Yeah. Well, thank you. So this book right here, it has some blue lines across it because I wrote it to somebody and I just drawed a big blue square. So that's what's inside. But yeah, so Can I Speak? I wrote this book, and it was over time. I joined a writer's workshop in Charlotte, and they sparked my creativity again because it had died. You know, I was always a writer. Like when I was younger, people were like, oh, you should write a book, because I was writing girls poems like, hey, baby, I love you, you know, and I was always good with words. And, you know, but I never believed that I could write a book because I wasn't smart enough. I wasn't the guy with the big vocabulary. So I never believed in that. But, you know, after Afghanistan and after, you know, the suicidal thoughts, I started doing poetry, and it was like 2012, and I'm like talking about the reflection, and I'm doing a poem with the mirror right beside me. And I'm talking about, I raised my right hand as he raised his left. I look to my right as he looks to the left, you know, and I'm talking about myself, the reflection of myself, but he's doing something different every time that I'm doing something. Right. And so I started seeing that. I started talking about darkness. I started talking about death. I started talking about suicide. I started talking about all of these things. And I was like, wow, this is inside of me. So I started writing more, Scott, and I wrote more because I wanted to see what was inside of me, the pain, the hurt, the damage, the pre-war, the Alan who grew up with his father and his mom and dad split, the Alan who watched his friend get hit by a car at the age of 12 and he died, the Alan who watched his grandmother die, that it's like it's these all of this traumatic stuff and everything inside of me. I was like, you know, let me write something. And, you know, it's a book that is aiming to evoke empathy out of people. So I make up some stories about a guy named Charles Townsend who loses his wife and he becomes an alcoholic, and no one seems to worry about why Charles is a drunkard, you know, and that his children are just falling to the wayside. They're just worried because he's an alcoholic. So they talk about him. And then one day Charles Townsend takes his life. And I talk about the pain of his love being buried in the earth because his wife died. You know, so I these stories came out of nowhere, and I was like, how can I put them in a poem? And then it's a compilation of my pain, my story. I got some victorious stuff. Don't let failure imprison your mind, bring scoliosis to your spine and leave you bent. You were born to be great, set aside to be great. Your every breath is more precious than diamonds and pearls. Step out from this world and take a leap into your destiny. I wrote victorious poems, right? And I just try to mix everything that was inside of me in that book. And that's what you have right there.
I think, yeah, I mean, those poems, you know, definitely are... show a little insight into you know the struggles that mm-hmm. that you've gone through, right? And so I know as an author myself, and I know I've talked to a lot of other authors, when mm-hmm. when you put your story out there, you mm-hmm. put your heart and your soul into the words that you're putting down on the paper, mm-hmm. It can be kind of scary sometimes to, you know, yeah. when you actually, you know, release it out into the world to have other people, mm-hmm. because that's a reflection on you, on yourself.
Yeah.
And if you get, you don't know what you're going to get as far as feedback goes. When you put that stuff out there, is it going to be, mm-hmm. you know, rave reviews, or is it going to be, you know, all criticism and things like
yeah.
that. And, you know, you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And so, it's a it's a hard thing to do, but I found with myself, after releasing things out, my story out there, it was very freeing too. Cause now it's like, yeah, you know what? Everyone knows my story. Everyone mm-hmm. who picks up a copy of that book is going to know my story and know what I've been going through for the last, you know, however many years now. And, it's encouraging too. I think getting that story out there and sharing it helps people to, like you said, have empathy and things like that too. So, and then you also have your podcast, the Purpose Pod. Mm-hmm. And I want to give you an opportunity to talk about that and, what kind of content do you have on there and what kind of guests and topics do you talk about there?
Yeah, thank you once again. So I'm getting into season three come March 8th. I'm going into season three of the Purpose Pod. I started the Purpose Pod when COVID hit, 2 years ago. And I interviewed 30 people in 30 days, like 30 days back to back to back to back. I interviewed 30 people, different stories. And I went on their page, websites like you do, I went on their websites, look it up. And I interviewed one person an hour each day. So 30 hours in a month, I started a podcast. And I said, if I'm still going afterwards, then that means that I really want to do this. And I went from 30 people in 30 days to interviewing every Tuesday into season two, interviewing the first and fourth Tuesday of the month. And that's what I'm at now. And I've interviewed NFL players, Cincinnati Bengals, Kareem Khalid. Our Khalid Kareem, he was on my podcast. He just played in the Super Bowl. James Bradbury, he played for the Panthers. He's New York Giants cornerback now. Maya Stoyan, she's an actress. And I interview professional authors, podcasters, singers, rappers, musicians, kidpreneurs, people. Overall, it's highlighting people who are living with a purpose, people who have found a purpose and are living it. And I bring them on a Purpose Pod because I want people who tune in, maybe they don't want to be a musician, but wow, like this person like overcame, XYZ, and they found their purpose. So, I want to provide a space for people to pull from other people in order to create their own story and live their own purposeful life.
That is, I think, another great thing that you're doing. It's a great purpose that you have to share these stories. Right. I really do, look forward to hearing more of these stories that come out on your podcast, because it's, they're inspiring, right? You get these people to come and share their story, how they discover their purpose. And, it's inspiring to hear these types of things. So I encourage everyone who's listening to this right now, stop what you're doing, go check out the Purpose Pod. And where can you tell people where they can find, your podcast and your book as well? I want to make sure that people know where to get that.
Thank you. So YouTube right now, I do a Facebook Live and YouTube Live, the Purpose Pod. I do a live interview on there. So I do YouTube Live. I'm working on getting all my stuff on like the other platforms, audio platforms and stuff, but I'm a one man band right now. So I'm taking my time with that, but mainly on YouTube. And then canispeakbook.com. You type that in and it'll take you to Amazon. And it's, I created a little domain for it so people could just get straight to it. But yeah, canispeakbook.com. And you can take it, you'll get it right there on Amazon. And when you read it, man, just, take your time. Some people say like, Alan, I read this and then I went back and I read it again, sometimes because it's poetry. So, with poetry, there's certain things people know about. Like I talk about Nipsey Hussle. He's a rapper that died, right? A couple of years ago, he got shot in front of his store. I use him and I create a poem. I talk about, the killing and stuff like that. So there's different things in there, and all poems might not be for everybody, but something in there will speak to you and motivate you.
Absolutely. Well, I could tell just from talking to you right now that there's definitely something in there for me that's gonna be motivating. So I'm looking forward to grabbing a copy of that and diving into it. So Alan, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I really do appreciate you coming on, sharing your story. And your energy level, your passion for what you're doing and everything, just it really comes through through your voice, through this conversation. I really, really see it there. And I'm hopeful that other people who listen to this let that energy be infectious to them and have that transfer over and drive them towards their purpose and their goals in life.
Drive on. That's what I'm talking about. I might write a poem called Drive On. Do you mind me doing my favorite, my failure poem that I did a snippet of it. Can I just do it real quick?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Is that okay? I don't want to like.
No, you're good. You're good. Okay,
cool. It's real quick. So here it goes. It's about failure. So don't let failure imprison your mind, bring scoliosis to your spine and leave you bent. You were born to be great, set aside to be great. Your every breath is more precious than diamonds and pearls. Step out from this world and take a leap into your destiny. Look into the mirror and see what others cannot. You are royalty. Your loyalty should be shown by how much you have grown. Seeds of failure and success have both been sown, but please don't step down from your throne. Keep marching, keep moving. You are almost home. So I'll stop right there, but drive on. Make sure you guys drive on with the spirit of resilience. Make sure you stay tuned in with Scott. He's a great man. I could already tell. I'm going to definitely buy your book, Scott. I just got to throw that out there. And I'm going to promote your podcast and I'm going to promote your book on my platform. So I appreciate you, brother.
I appreciate it. I really do. Thank you very much. And thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.